joining Wintrust Business Lunch with me, Jisoo Gyi. Hope you had a fantastic weekend filled with sunshine and bad-for-you Super Bowl snacks. Yum. We'll be continuing our credit series discussion with real estate and finance expert Elise Glink. But we're starting this Monday off with Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey, happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. I'm glad that you showed up for work.
Happy to be here.
I'm glad you didn't call in sick and
yes,
we're on the show.
No, we are rocked and ready to go.
Okay, so wanted to talk a little bit. I know that everyone's been talking about the Super Bowl commercials, but this year the average cost for a 30-second Super Bowl spot was a record high, $5.6 million just for those 30 seconds, according to Forbes. Wanted to talk about some of the tech ads that I found interesting. I know a lot of folks talking about the Google ad, and it was something that featured a gentleman who had been married for a very long time, who'd lost his wife. Her name was Loretta, and it was really a tearjerker.
Totally. Yeah, the Google ad certainly stood out, and it was very interesting. You know, I think the reason that an ad like that stands out is because so much of Super Bowl advertising is kind of very irreverent and comical and slapstick. And so when you have kind of a much different tone in an ad, it can certainly stand out. So it's not surprising that a lot of people found that ad to be maybe one of their favorites, one of the heartwarming ads. I mean, personally, I found it a little unsettling.
I was going to say, you had a totally different take. Pretty much everyone I was watching the game with were a little misty-eyed, but it brought up bigger questions for you.
Well, to me, I think it's indicative of just how kind of as a society, we're sort of becoming very normalized to internet surveillance, right? I mean, Google, as this giant multi-billion-dollar tech company, has, you know,
Of course, local ties here in Chicago.
Of course, grown a ton here in Chicago, just opened up at the end of last year another office in the West Loop, hiring a ton of people here in Chicago. So yeah, Chicago, a big presence for Google. But we give Google so much of our information already. It has our facial recognition. It has everything we've ever asked the computer. It has all of our internet search history, essentially everything that we're shopping for. And now we're, you know, actively giving it all of our deepest, most intimate moments with our closest relatives. Like, I understand the use case scenario here with the gentleman in the ad, and actually it was based on a real life scenario, so kind of cool to see that be incorporated into it. But I mean, the question to me is, you know, it speaks to this trade-off that we're going to have as we get more embedded with big tech, is privacy versus, you know, the data that it's able to collect, and how much of our privacy are we willing to give companies like Google in return for the services and the kind of things that it's able to provide. So, you know, is Google being, the fact that Google is able to kind of like give you these memories in return, is that worth every piece of data that you're willing to give it up front?
It made me think of sci-fi movies, and I thought one day in the future, is there going to be a computer chip that we can implant in our brain to help us remember when we start losing our memory?
It was a little dystopian to me, honestly. I was a little unsettled by it. I mean, I know why it kind of pulled at the heartstrings for everybody and was this very emotional ad, but I was not a part of the group that was totally in love with it, to be honest with you.
Well, and except for Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno, Google over there in the West Loop, most everyone really loved it and it got misty-eyed, and it really hit you, punched in the heart. Okay, so a lot of people also talking about Facebook as well. Their ad was about Facebook groups, and they, you know, tended to shy away from any of the criticisms that have been, you know, they've had a rough couple of years, especially with being called out for the, you know, inaccurate data and election manipulation. And they seem to say, hey, let's get back to the core of what we do, which is connecting people. And they featured different Facebook groups and ended with Chris Rock and Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, you know, Facebook may have taken a bit of a hit to the public perception in the last year, couple years. But I mean, the bottom line hasn't really been that affected. Facebook still, turns out it's a very effective advertising business. People spend a lot of money to advertise on Facebook. I think they did around $70 billion in revenue in 2019. So a business is still very good at Facebook. And I think it was interesting to see them focus in on their Facebook groups vertical. This is kind of like a little bit more of a private-ish segment of what Facebook is able to do right there. And this is not just, you know, the regular feed where you're, you know, giving updates to all of your high school friends that you maybe haven't spoken to in the last 10 or 15 years, right? I mean, this is kind of more curated groups. So interesting to kind of see Facebook double down on that part of the biz.
Before we move on from the Super Bowl ads, I have to ask you what is Quibi, but that is coming up. Winterest Business Lunch, G here, joined by senior editor at Chicago Inno, Jim Dalkey. We were just talking about the Facebook and Google ads that were shown during the Super Bowl. We wanted to mention one more ad. I was very confused. It was a... looked like a failed bank heist because the getaway driver didn't show up, and it was for a company named Quibi. What is Quibi, Jim?
So yeah, Quibi, interesting business. They are a new streaming company that they're going to do kind of a mobile-only streaming video service. So they're a very, very heavily funded startup out of the West Coast, and what they're going to do is kind of focus on short-form video content specifically for your phone. So think like 10 minutes max is the episode length. So think different TV shows and different other kinds of content like that. So interesting business. You know, they getting a Super Bowl ad actually makes a lot of sense for them because just like you mentioned up top, what is Quibi? It's a weird word. People aren't familiar with it. That's kind of the perfect opportunity for some of this new tech to get in front of a mass audience. Disney Plus, everybody's aware of it, but it's smart for them to kind of get in the Super Bowl ad as well. So you know, Quibi, and similar to Disney Plus, is kind of focusing on that mobile content, and they're going to launch their service in April of this year. So we're really kind of focusing on 10-minute sort of snackable video content.
So this is a few months ahead of its actual launch.
That's right. And you wonder how impactful that will be. Will people still remember Quibi when it launches in April? You know, like, oh, maybe that's that thing from the Super Bowl. Yeah, I mean, it would have maybe been a little more helpful if their service was already live while the Super Bowl commercial was airing. But still, I think part of Quibi's you know, sort of focus here will be sort of just awareness in general, making sure people know what they are.
And you have a throwback commercial you want us to remember. Poor Groupon, who was started here in Chicago. They're still headquartered here. You're not going to let them live down this commercial they played. How many years ago?
That's right. So Groupon's first Super Bowl ad was in 2011. And, you know, every time you watch a Super Bowl, you think, wow, that was really bad. That was a really bad commercial. Geez, I didn't like that commercial. I promise you, it wasn't as bad as the ad that Groupon had back in 2011. It was with actor Timothy Hutton. They were kind of basically criticized because the ad appeared to insult Tibetan refugees. It was a very sort of like oddly irreverent ad from Groupon. The message actually didn't come across because it turns out that on Groupon's website, they were actually directing people to donate to the cause.
They were trying to do something good.
But the tone completely missed. They had to pull the ad. They had to make a public apology. It was ranked at the worst Super Bowl ad of the year. You know, it cost $3 million. So it was like a giant kind of failure for Groupon. And remember, this is 2011. So this is IPO hype Groupon, a completely different business than it is kind of today, but a really kind of big public swing and miss for Chicago-based Groupon a few years ago.
Groupon, we love you here at WGN Radio. Just blame Jim Dalkey, senior editor at Chicago Inno.
I know, I feel like I'm being very negative today, more negative than I am normally.
We're going to move on to some positive stories. There's a really cool startup that's going to help public defenders save countless hours. And of course, we know public defenders, there's not enough of them. And of course, they're limited with time.
Totally. So this is a startup in Chicago called Justice Text, and they are working on a software platform that helps public defenders analyze video. So what their software is able to do is allow public defenders to take hours and hours of video footage, whether that's from a police body camera or a video interrogation, and quickly transcribe that footage for them so they kind of know who's speaking, what they're saying, and rather than having to sit through hours and hours in video, this software quickly transcribes everything for them so they can search the text, find where different people are speaking, find where different action is happening, and really save them hours and hours. Like you said, public defenders are strapped for time. They are overworked. They have too many clients. This is a service that could potentially save many hours for public defenders. So this is a startup out of UChicago.
And in the article on Chicago Inno, it says that 80% of criminal cases involve video evidence. And of course, they're usually also juggling multiple cases for public defenders. So they just really don't have the physical time to watch the video.
That's right. And video is just becoming a bigger piece of cases in general, right? Just think about, you know, body cameras are a relatively new phenomenon, right? And they're becoming increasingly important for kind of helping cases get to trial and work their way through the justice system. And this startup has actually got a little bit of grant funding from a program founded by David Axelrod here in Chicago. So got some big name backers kind of behind them as well. But yeah, university founded business with a really interesting angle here. I like that, you know, a lot of college students go to school and they think, hey, I'm going to make a dating app or a food delivery app. And these guys are really kind of trying to like disrupt the criminal justice system, which I think is a really kind of admirable approach to startup building.
And you said the software is called Justice Text, T-E-X-T, and it's sold to justice departments on a subscription basis?
That's right. So they're working with the Cook County Public Defender's Office right now and a few other public defenders across the country as they're starting to kind of roll out their pilot programs.
Super cool. So these are these are like not even grad students. These are just in undergrad.
Yeah, these are University of Chicago students. And, you know, that's what's so great about kind of covering the university startup scene. We've been doing it for the past 6 years, is that really some of Chicago's best businesses start at UChicago, at Northwestern. I mean, we've seen companies like Grubhub really being born here at the student level and become.
And I can't live without my Grubhub.
Exactly. So, but I mean, everything from getting your, you know, Chinese food delivered in a couple of hours to having a tool for public defenders, a lot of interesting businesses coming out of the student startups from Chicago.
Well, this is looks like an incredible software. It can automatically identify when different individuals are speaking in the video, so it can tell different voices apart. Very cool. Okay, Justice Text from seniors at the University of Chicago. Boy, do I feel like an underachiever. Okay, so you've got another... we were just talking about Facebook. This has definitely been in the news lately about the big, big class action lawsuit about privacy.
That's right. Illinois has really the strongest biometric privacy lawsuit in the U.S. And kind of what that means is, you know, if you're going to use facial recognition for somebody on your sort of a web platform, you have to have consent for that. And that's kind of what Illinois' law says. And Facebook was sued by Illinois facing this class action lawsuit back in 2015, I believe. And just last week, Facebook agreed to pay $550 million in this lawsuit. It's the largest cash settlement ever for a privacy lawsuit sort of around this facial recognition issue, and could be kind of a cornerstone issue for other states going forward as they kind of look to fight the kind of overreaches of big tech.
Talking with Jim Dahlke, he's a senior editor at Chicago Inno, talking about the big Facebook class action lawsuit where Facebook has agreed to pay $550 million. And I hear that some of the members can receive a big sum of money. Usually you get only a couple of dollars, but I'm hearing that some people could potentially see $200.
Yeah, still being worked out, but it looks like about $200 is what Facebook users are looking for. So you have to be a user between about mid 2011 to mid 2015 and to kind of take part in the sort of class action settlement.
And the biometric privacy that was violated is the facial recognition that can tell whether you're in a photo.
Exactly.
So it tells you automatically tag this person.
This is Facebook's tag suggestion feature. So basically you have a photo on Facebook. Facebook suggests, hey, this might be this person. So it's sort of automatically identifying who that could be. That is where it violated the Illinois law. And so, and basically, as a result of this settlement, Facebook now will have to require your consent before you can access this tag suggestions feature. So pretty interesting that Illinois is really leading the way. There's only three states that have similar laws. Illinois has kind of the strictest one. And be curious to see if other states adopt this.
Love hearing about this, a new initiative to boost women in tech fields. And there's a big name behind this, a lot of money and an incredible name backing this project.
That's right. Yes. Just last week, Melinda Gates has introduced kind of a new initiative to boost women in tech. They're doing it in several cities across the U.S., but they're starting the program off actually here in Chicago. So the initiative is called Gender Equality in Tech Cities, GET Cities, and it is a $50 million effort that's going to take place over 5 years to accelerate women representation and leadership in the tech industry, focusing first here in Chicago.
Fantastic. Okay, so we talked a little bit about this, I think, before last week. Scooters are going to be coming back to Chicago, dreaming about the really warm weather when we can ride scooters.
That's right. You know, when Chicago's scooter pilot wrapped up last year, the future of it was really kind of in question and up in the air. We weren't really sure if actually scooters were going to come back at all. So the news we got last week is, yes, you will see scooters back in Chicago starting when the weather gets warmer this year. It's basically what the city is calling its second pilot program, trying to gather more data, figure out the best way to use scooters.
And what type of data is the city trying to collect and figure out?
Well, one is, you know, how much demand is there. I mean, there was over 800,000 rides in Chicago's pilot program last year, which is a lot. The city also found that most of those rides were taken kind of right at the kickoff of the program, so it tapered off a bit as the program went on. So there's going to be a question of demand. There's going to be a question of, you know, equity. Are the scooters being given to the areas that need it the most in terms of transportation equality throughout the city of Chicago? And are they going to be put in areas where they're going to be used? So there's a lot that still is up in the air. You know, questions around clutter and sidewalks and making sure that they are, you know, handled appropriately by the riders and the companies themselves, kind of following the rules of the city. So there is a lot that we still need to figure out with scooters. Their future beyond this pilot program is still up in the air as well. We actually don't know very many details beyond the fact that the program is coming. So we don't know the companies that are going to be here. We don't know exactly how many scooters are going to be here. We don't know where they're exactly going to be. But hopefully it will be a little bit different than what we saw in the last pilot to see kind of what the demand is like in Chicago. And if Chicago as a city is kind of receptive to this kind of new micro mobility transportation.
I'm sure the Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection and CDOT got a lot of feedback from people. I remember hearing a lot about the clutter discussion.
Yes, and I think that, you know, there seems to be kind of two camps. Either you just can't stand scooters, you don't want to see them anywhere, or, you know, they're a nice method of transportation to get you kind of from the L to your apartment, right? They kind of fit this really nice area where it's like, maybe I don't want to pay for an Uber ride, but I've got about a half mile, maybe 3/4 mile walk where, hey, a little motorized scooter could really be kind of helpful to get me to my final destination.
It elicits love or hate from folks, I think, that live in the city.
I think that's fair.
You said that we should check out the website in order to find out about a new class of Techstars. What are Techstars?
Yeah, so Techstars is really one of the kind of most prominent startup accelerator in town. Just announced a new class, so 10 new companies in the Techstars class with their demo day coming up later this year.
Well, thank you so much to Senior Editor Jim Dahlke of Chicago Inno. And do you want to give us your website?
Yeah, check us out at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Well, we really appreciate you being here. Jim Dahlke, Senior Editor of Chicago Inno. Be sure to check the website out. A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. Hope you're having a fantastic Monday. Thanks for staying with Wintrust Business Lunch. G here, joined now by CEO of Best Money Moves. Her website is ThinkGlink, GLINK.com. Elise Glink, who is a real estate and finance expert, joins us now. Hi, Elise.
Hi, G. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm excited that we're going to continue this discussion because you talked last week about how you've started a new credit series.
I did. You know, there's so many people who have questions about their credit, and so much misinformation is out there, and everybody's nervous with it being tax season. Officially, the IRS opened its doors this week, and so I decided to do a 10-part series that has a lot of information about basic credit things that you really need to know about your credit in order to make the most of your money. And I call it Credit 101, and it's at thinklink.com, and it's free for everybody.
And it's something we have to think about, especially now during tax season. Why is that?
So it's super interesting, but a lot of people have actually been the victim of tax-related ID theft. So identity theft, about 33% of Americans have actually been at risk of having identity theft, according to information from Equifax, which, by the way, is sponsoring the Credit 101 series. And when it comes to filing your taxes, you may not even know that you've actually been the victim of tax ID theft, tax-related identity theft, until you go to file. But if your Social Security number has been compromised, then you might, but you don't know, right? So you file your taxes. What might come back to you is a letter from the IRS inquiring about a suspicious tax return that you didn't file. And you might get an email back, not an email, a letter from the IRS saying that you can't e-file your tax return because a duplicate Social Security number has already done that. And a lot of times you get people who are committing tax fraud, they'll file the minute that the IRS opens for business with your Social Security number trying to get whatever refund would have been available to you otherwise.
Elise, I'm guessing we don't want to wait until we get a letter from the IRS. I'm assuming that we want to try to prevent this if we can. How do we do that?
You do want to do that. So, you know, one of the things that you can do is get on that filing of taxes. Now, a lot of us wait, and I did this story for so many years when I was on air at WGN-TV, where it's, you know, the last day, it's April 15th, and here's the last-minute instructions. Don't be last. This is a time to be first. You want to get your tax return in before anybody else has done that. And if you do get a note from the IRS saying, we're having a problem or you can't e-file, then what you want to do is you're going to have to call to the IRS immediately, and there's a number that you can get on irs.gov right on the homepage that helps you get some specialized assistance, and I can give that number to you right now. It's 1-800-908-4490. That is the number for the IRS if you think you have been a victim of tax-related identity theft.
So that's 1-800-908-4490.
Right.
Okay. So what is it? So check our credit report. Is that the best way also to make sure that nothing suspicious is going on?
Absolutely. It is really important for you to go online, and we talk about this in the Credit 101 series, to go online to either annualcreditreport.com, which is the Federal Trade Commission requires the three credit reporting agencies, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, to sponsor this site where you can get a copy of your credit history from each of those agencies for free once a year. Or there's other places that you can go pay for a copy of your credit history, or you can go to myequifax.com and you can actually get your Equifax credit history for free.
Elise, is this also a time when we should be checking our Social Security information as well on the Social Security Administration site?
I think it's always a good idea to know exactly where you are with Social Security. And so one of the things that's confused people is over the last few years, the Social Security office has stopped sending those paper filings. They were sort of a four-page folded document. You got it in the mail right around your birthday, about a month before. And it would tell you what your earnings had been up to date. And you'd have to go and compare with what you had actually earned and make sure it was correct. But the Social Security office has stopped sending those, in part due to identity theft issues and concerns. And so now you have to go online, set up an account with the Social Security office, and it's an excellent idea to just check to make sure, especially if you're age 62 or older, because age 62 is the first year that you're eligible to get Social Security benefits, whether or not you want to do that. And you want to make sure that nobody else has filed in your place.
Talking with real estate and finance expert Elise Glink. Her website is thinkglink.com. A lot of resources and this entire credit series is on the website. But Elise, you're, you know, just reinforcing that this is not the time to procrastinate during tax season.
It isn't. And for those people who are worried about spending the money, they need some help. I mean, it's really complicated to file your taxes. And honestly, it shouldn't be, but it is. If you earn $69,000 a year or less, you can go to IRS.gov. You can file for free both federal and state returns. If your income is above $69,000, there are free file forms available online, but you have to know how to do your taxes yourself. The forms do the math for you, but only offer basic guidance. But beyond that, there's other help that's available as well, and I would encourage everybody to go to IRS.gov and look this up, because there's volunteer income tax assistance. The VITA program has been going on for years. They offer free tax help to people who make around $56,000 a year or less, people with disabilities, or those who have limited English skills. And they help you fill out your return. And there's offices and sites that they set up from now until April 15th all over the Chicago metropolitan area, and you can go and look it up online.
Elise, this is a question I get via text a lot from listeners. Do you recommend that folks get a or subscribe to an identity theft program? Is that something that you think is a good idea?
Well, I think it is a good idea, and there are a lot of different ones that are out there. I've been subscribed now for the last, I don't even know how many years, I want to say 8 or 9 years, and I subscribed to my mother as well, and I did that right after she'd had her identity stolen, because I thought, I'm not there with my mom anymore, I live with my husband Sam, and, you know, mom needs somebody looking out for her too, and so it has been very helpful for us. And there's a variety of price points out there. There's different kinds of features that you can get from it. But I do think it's not a bad idea to consider it when there's so much identity fraud going on. Now, that's not to say that you can't protect yourself. If you're vigilant and you're always looking online at your credit card statements, for example, so if you're the kind of person who only looks at your credit card statements once a month, it's probably not enough to figure out if you've had your identity stolen. So you probably want to look online and pay for some more of your credit histories if you're going to do it yourself.
Finance and real estate expert Elise Glink. Her website is thinkglink.com. Elise, I hope in the future we can talk about what to look for in an accountant, especially if you do make more than that 60-some thousand threshold. Hopefully you can give us some good advice on that.
Anytime, G.
Thanks so much. Okay, a lot more coming up on WGN Radio. So very much appreciate you staying with WGN Radio throughout your day. G here with the Winterest Business Lunch, joined now by WGN Radio's Amy Guth, who
Hello.
Just walked into studio.
Hello, how's it going?
Great, especially with the sunshine. I'm thrilled.
I don't think I realized how much I missed it until it was there, and I was like, oh, this is glorious. Like yesterday, I was like, oh.
I am extraordinarily happy, and you have, well, this isn't such happy news, though, but you wanted to mention coronavirus. I know that's been prevalent in all the news coverage.
Yeah, well, one story that I've been watching, and I don't even want to say story, that's just an issue I've been watching that I think is really interesting, is watching news organizations, fact checkers, and various government, health organizations working together to combat misinformation around coronavirus. I think at this point, everybody has seen or heard something that is just not accurate, right? You've probably been tagged in something on Facebook saying anything from this kind of food did this or this kind of condition spreads that, whatever. There's a lot of misinformation out there. Anytime there's a big story with emotions attached to it, we see people kind of preying on that. So I think it's been interesting to watch how fact checkers are really being very deliberate. And a lot of the news organizations like Pointer and things like that have been writing about the task ahead for combating misinformation around a public health crisis. I think it's really interesting.
A lot of concerns about whether a package that you're getting from China might potentially be able to
There's all kind of things. Somebody that I barely even know tagged me in something saying, you know, buy a certain brand of mask on Amazon because they're the only ones that don't have like asbestos. And I was like, this is originated from the person who made that mask. Like, guys, everybody take a breath. Come on. It's all good. So, you know, I think, again, anytime we see a story where there's a lot of emotions, particularly in this one, you know, I think there's a lot of kind of fear and concern. We'll see these kinds of things. That's just kind of the nature of social media. But I think that's interesting to watch. And, you know, I know it can be kind of embarrassing if you get called on something like that. Like somebody I know sent me something and I had to go, you know what, actually, that's not a real thing. Here's some background. You know, you do it kindly, but it's embarrassing if you get called out on something. But it's much better to go, oh, my bad. Thanks for correcting me, and just move on than trying to make a thing about, you know.
A topic everyone has been talking about since it turned 2020 is legal weed sales.
That's right.
So we've got the first month numbers now.
Yeah. So Illinois marijuana retailers sold $39.2 million worth of weed in the first full month of recreational sales. Interesting footnote on that is about 22% of that, according to the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, came from outside the state of Illinois. So that's people from Wisconsin and Indiana driving in, or, you know, Missouri, wherever, driving in to buy that in states where it's not yet legal. So the state didn't release numbers on how exactly all the, you know, how the sales tax was received from those sales. But, you know, to compare that to other places, so when Nevada made recreational sales legal, they had $27 million their first month. Michigan, which started recreational sales on December 1st, though they're doing it in a very different way. So I think this is kind of a not totally fair comparison, but they did $12.7 million in total sales during the first 7 weeks. But during the State of the State last week, Governor Pritzker mentioned that. He said, you know, he's calling this weed tourism, which is kind of not a thing you are used to hearing in the State of the State. You know, we're not used to hearing state officials talking about that. But nonetheless, he called it weed tourism and said, hey, this is a chance to collect tax revenue from residents of nearby states, but also emphasized, you know, one of the key parts of this legalization process was about giving, you know, expunging records and giving a second chance to people who have low-level cannabis convictions on their record.
Apparently, there really will be marijuana tour buses as well.
Well, that's, you know, word on the street. I haven't seen any of those yet, but, you know, that there will be a lot of kind of ancillary industries that will pop up, you know, that I'm sure will have, yes, buses or, you know, who knows what that'll kind of come up around this that I think is interesting. You know, we already have seen a lot of CBD oil in our skincare and vitamins, and, you know, we've already started to see that, and I think that will only continue. But that's kind of an interesting thing to watch. Anytime we have kind of this new space, we see a lot of innovation happening, especially when there is a lot of regulation, because sometimes I think putting constraints on something helps people be a little more creative of what to do with it. So that'll be something to watch, I think, for at least the next year.
Tour bus apparently comes with a tour guide, and then you have a stop at a private bring your own smoking lounge. So
bring your own.
If you need any
BYOW,
yes,
bring your own
suggestions
weed
for your next birthday party.
I suppose if that's your thing, go for it.
What else do you have? You have something on the hospitals, right?
Yeah. So I talked a couple of weeks ago about this merger planned on the South Side, and that is a proposed combination of Advocate Trinity, Mercy, South Shore, and St. Bernard. And so now, at just a couple of weeks, you know, on the heels of that, Cook County Health is pausing plans that they had announced over the summer to build a new, very expensive new facility, $240 million facility. The aim of that is to replace Provident Hospital in Bronzeville. So, you know, suddenly we're in an interesting moment on Southside Hospitals. That gives them a moment to go, okay, pump the brakes. What's happening with this four-hospital merger? In particular, because St. Bernard is very close to Provident. It's about 3 miles away. So I think we're going to see a little bit of a waiting game. Let this four-hospital merger kind of happen and see how that shakes out, because there are plans to add another facility to that and to really kind of double down on outpatient services. So I think Cook County is kind of saying, okay, let's just kind of see what happens here before we move. So we're not doing anything redundant. So we're not, you know, I don't think it's possible to overserve an area, but I think they want to be smart about stretching dollars, especially in an area where there are some uncompensated services. So interesting story to watch there that's just emerging today.
You've been watching this story develop for a while now. What is the overall positive and the overall negative that you're hearing from this merger?
Well, and I think you and I talked about this a little bit earlier. You know, the positive is we need to really think about how costs are happening, how services can be merged and consolidated a bit in hospital systems. And we're seeing that around the industry, right? However, in particular, you have to be really thoughtful about, is it a burden to put on communities, say, if you are used to going just a mile away from your home? If there's a big consolidation, they're not going to have, say, a dialysis lab in every facility. Suddenly, that means traveling 10 miles away instead of 1 mile away, and that might be difficult to accomplish. So I think you have to really keep the community in mind with these kind of things. And it sounds like officials are doing that and really trying to think through that. Particularly, you know, when you're talking about where you're stretching tax dollars, what patient revenue covers, what is uncompensated, what's picked up by the state for low-income patients, things like that. So a lot of complicated pieces, but I think it'll be interesting to kind of watch how this all shakes out.
One trending story that I wanted to add in particular for our producer, Jasmine Cooper, who loves the store, Forever 21. Jasmine, there might be hope. I know this has been part of the retail apocalypse for you, including Payless. You were so upset about Payless going
so
out of business.
Stores.
But a group, this is reported by Bloomberg, including two of Forever 21's biggest landlords, has offered to buy the bankrupt retailer for $81 million. Of course, it's a fraction of what the international fashion pioneer was worth once, but there's hope.
Here's the thing about Forever 21 is sometimes they had really cute stuff in the window, and it's like pretty affordable. You know, you could just kind of hop in and like, oh, I need a little dress, whatever. But twice I like to think I don't look Asian, but twice I went in there and like a salesperson with very good intentions was like, are you looking for someone? Which is code for like, are you looking for your child, old lady? And so I felt really, I feel funny about it.
Oh, no way.
It's fine.
Don't say that.
It's fine.
Don't say that. Jasmine. It's always great for the last minute deal.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And good for like basic stuff. You're like, I just need like a little, you know, a top to go with this outfit.
Well, right. Jasmine, we're all keeping our fingers crossed. Thanks so much to WGN Radio's Amy Guth. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.